This is Medicaid Leadership Exchange, a podcast where Medicaid directors and other guests get frank about what it's like to steward the nation's largest health insurance program. Through Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program, 56 agencies administer a complex web of programs that provide access to essential health services. Listen in as we explore some of the challenges Medicaid leaders navigate and their top priorities to deliver services and build health.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Kate McAvoy, NEMD's Executive Director. When you think of Medicaid agency staff, you probably think about experts who are proficient in many technical details of the program, things like managed care contracting, eligibility processes, and even federal authorities. But today we're going to explore a different set of attributes that some agency staff bring to their leadership in Medicaid, and that is lived experience. There are many Medicaid leaders whose personal experience contributes greatly to how they understand their work and its impact on members. And this is what we are excited to explore today. I'm so thrilled to be here with my co-host, Mark Larson, who is the Senior Vice President of Leadership and Capacity Building at the Center for Healthcare Strategies. Mark, would you like to offer a few framing remarks and also introduce our guests?
Kate, I would love to. I'm very excited about our conversation today. What I recognize is that we don't always value the humanness of public servants. And today we have three really wonderful people who do very important work and do that in ways that are, I find, very inspiring. And so I'd like to welcome our three guests. First, Nicole Harris from the state of Pennsylvania. Can I welcome you and ask you to tell our listeners a little bit about what you do?
Sure, Mark. Good afternoon, everyone. As Mark said, I'm Nicole Harris. I have the pleasure of serving as the Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Children's Health Insurance Program, also known as CHIP, a role I've held since 2022. So what I do on an every day is I have the opportunity to provide affordable and quality health care to parents across Pennsylvania. We love to say all children are eligible for CHIP since we have a very robust program that allows anyone to buy into the CHIP program. So love making sure that all children in Pennsylvania have access to affordable health care.
Nicole, welcome to the podcast. We're also pleased to have Martin Van Beek from the state of Idaho. Martin, welcome. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what you do?
Yes, thank you, Mark. My name is Martin Van Beek, Quality Director here at the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. I joined Medicaid in 2022 after many years in public health. And in my role, I oversee population health and quality initiatives in Idaho, and I'm responsible for our value-based care.
Welcome, Martin. And somewhat in your neighborhood, Martin, we're welcome to have Rachel Calloway from the state of Oregon. Rachel, welcome, and wonder if you could say a little bit about what you do and your background.
Yeah, thank you both Mark and Kate for having me here today. My name is Rachel Calloway, and I'm currently the Medicaid Chief of Staff at Oregon Health Authority. I've been a pediatric nurse for the last 10 years, working all over the country. I did travel nursing as well, so been in quite a few states. After that, I worked at the Centers for Medicaid and CHIP Services, or CMCS, as well as the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, and have found myself here in Oregon, a bit of a generalist working on everything all across the division and our big strategic initiatives and policy implementation. So great to be here.
Welcome to you all. Kate, do you want to get us started today?
Absolutely. So great to hear where you're focusing in your respective states. And just layering on that, we'd love to hear more about how your own lens with either Medicaid in particular or some other related aspect of the healthcare system is influencing the way you think about your Medicaid leadership. And Nicole, may I start with you in that respect?
Sure. So often when people ask me, what does a CHIP family look like, or what does a CHIP kid look like, I get to tell my own story. I am a former CHIP kid. I was on using the CHIP services when I was a child until I aged out at age 19. And the CHIP program was set up for families just like mine. I'm the youngest of six children, two hardworking parents who were over the Medicaid income limits, but employer-based private insurance is just way too expensive for six kids. And We were true 80s and 90s kids. We liked to climb trees, jump out of pickup trucks, so our pediatrician saw us quite a few times. So free healthcare for six children was life-changing for my parents. So I love what the CHIP program stands for, its mission, its vision, to connect those families who feel like they're in that gap. Like, I'm not making too much for Medicaid, but it's still very expensive to provide behavioral health, vision, dental. You name it, we needed it, and CHIP was there for us. So when I needed braces, CHIP was there. When my sister needed glasses, CHIP was there, even for the big stuff. My brother needed orthopedic surgery, and CHIP was there. He was able to get his legs corrected. I don't know what we would have did if this program hadn't existed when we were children.
Thank you so much for illuminating and bringing that to life, both just profiling the nature of your family's use of the program, all that typical kids stuff and those incidental accidents, but also the bigger things that may come along. So really helpful to really have a full view of the scope of the coverage of the program. And also that aspect that it is intended to wrap around the Medicaid program, especially for working families at higher income levels. So Nicole, thank you so much for giving us that worldview. Rachel, could we segue to you to talk about some experience that you bring to the program?
Yeah, happy to. My kind of origin story to, I guess, Medicaid leadership now, it started actually in the last semester of my nursing school quite a while ago, and I had a public health rotation. And so at this time, each week, I would go to a high school in Austin, Texas, and met with students who were pregnant or had recently had a baby for prenatal classes or perinatal classes, talking about how to care for themselves or their newborn safety. And towards the end of that public health rotation, we had an opportunity to give a legislative testimony to the Senate. And so I was one of two brave people in my nursing cohort to volunteer. And I asked the Senate to consider a bill that for pregnant minors or for minors with children, that their parental consent could be waived from the Medicaid CHIP application. And so what I had learned with working with these high school students each week was that while they could sign their child up and enroll in benefits for their own child, they had a hard time enrolling themselves because some of their family who didn't necessarily support the pregnancy, they no longer had contact. And so they weren't able to get that parent and guardian consent for the application. So I saw this gap. And being able to advocate for that community that I've been working with, it's very sad. Also made me feel like a kid at Six Flags. Like, I grew up on Medicaid myself, and I know that it can be a lifeline, as Nicole was sharing as well for her and her family. And also being a pediatric nurse for 10 years, it wasn't just clinical experience. It was also this immersion in how Medicaid works and sometimes doesn't work for families. And so I think those experiences of just, you know, growing up the way I did on Medicaid and also food stamps and being a nurse, that's kind of really helped bake in almost as a default for how I think about approaching work and keeping people at the center.
Really wonderful to hear that through line from your own personal and family experience being served by the program, how that was an influence on your role and identity as a clinician. And then that piece carrying through essentially surfacing needs among people who were eligible for the program through the policymaking process and bringing change that could be beneficial to folks accessing and remaining covered. Really terrific to hear. And Martin, tell us a little bit about your lens in this discussion.
Yeah, there's two things that I bring. My accent probably gave it away. I'm not from the United States, and I didn't grow up myself as a kid with Medicaid, but I moved here in my 20s and really had to figure out how the American healthcare system worked, like how to get insurance, how to get care, and like noticing the differences. Like if you find care, you get it really quick sometimes, but oh boy, it's really expensive. So yeah, just navigating all that is definitely experience I bring. And then second, when I became a father, I have a son with a developmental disability, and he has special needs. So it impacts him at home, at school, in the community, and finding the right care is challenging, especially in a state like Idaho, where it's sometimes very hard to find people with special needs that can take care of people with special needs. Through the Medicaid, the Idaho Medicaid Katie Beckett program, we were able to get in contact with resources, connected with other people who go through the same process. We were able to learn from other people's experiences, but also it gave me like a different look at Medicaid. I work in Medicaid every day, but to go through that application process myself and like figuring out how hard it is to maybe complete some of these documents and do things the right way. And yeah, really give me, a unique or a good experience that I can bring to my day-to-day work.
Martin, I appreciate you sort of leading us into the next place that we were curious. I mean, you all have these personal experiences that, you know, may or may not be particularly visible to folks that you serve and or for others that you work with. You were just mentioning sort of the how you bring that to work. And I'm wondering if you could give a specific example of like, where do you see yourself tapping into that personal experience in your professional role?
Yeah, I bring that experience, I would say, every day to work. When we talk with the leadership about policy and program decisions. But yeah, to give a specific example, in my role, my team also oversees the Medicaid Advisory Committee and the Beneficiary Advisory Council, the MAC and BAC. So it really gives Medicaid beneficiaries an opportunity to weigh in on like policy decision, programmatic decisions, and things like that, like either as a beneficiary or like through public comments. So it gives me, I think, a little bit better connection with some of these people that do bring concerns to the table. And especially recently, or in 2025 and still now, like there's been a lot of people talking about family and personal care services. We made some changes in 2025, and it really impacts people with developmental disabilities like my son. So to be able to help these people, making sure that they have a voice that's heard by our leadership team, is something I can bring to the table. And if they want to come to the table, I want to make it as easy as possible for them. So if they want to become a BAC member, like what does an easy application look like? When we have MAC meetings, like are we using plain language that they can understand? Or when we disseminate or hand out like materials, like make sure it connects with these people. So yeah, that's something I bring. But like I said, I bring that. I think every time we think about programs, it's like, what does this mean to the beneficiary?
Yeah, Martin, I appreciate the commitment that you have to having people be heard, but I can only imagine the impact that it has on people actually feeling heard to know that you are there, right? Or that you have that common experience. Nicole, I'm curious, what does this spark for you in terms of where do you see your personal experience showing up in the way that you do your work or the way that you are a leader in Pennsylvania?
I had to give this question some thought because this was a really good question. So thank you for asking it. But I really think it shows up for me in that lens. I always try to incorporate the parental lens because I think about my own family and parents. So I always go, well, especially when we have policy conversations, like, well, it may work for us, but is it really going to work in reality for families? Something that I have always encouraged my managed care organizations and our different partners to think about is timing is a big part of access to care. Like, I remember my mom having to schedule 4 doctor's appointments and have to take off of work and get us all out of school. And if the doctor had to reschedule, that was a whole major conflict in rescheduling. So telling folks, maybe we should think about weekend hours for children, for parents and things like that. Something that's not 9 to 5 so they can actually have that access to get to the doctors and things like that. I'm a big advocate for bringing the care to the community. I think we have gotten stuck in a regimen of people go to the healthcare clinic or facility to get their care, but we can bring that care to folks as well. So one thing that we did tangibly here in Pennsylvania is we have a Vision to Learn program. We did it through a CHIP Health Service Initiative. And it simply is we partner with a program that they go and they bring a mobile clinic to different schools across the Commonwealth. And they do eye screenings and give kids free eyeglasses, Warby Parker eyeglasses, and they get free replacements if they lose that first pair. And if you ever had a kid with eyeglasses, you know you're going to need that backup replacement pair. So we've launched that about 3 years ago, and I think about 2,000 children have been screened and have received glasses across Pennsylvania. And that was just one way. I was like, yes, let's bring the care back to the children. We know where they're going to be. They're going to be in school. So let's set up a way to get those types of services to the schools. So definitely seeing that trend catch on with managed care organizations, having different things like dental vans and being able to do dental screenings at schools and different partnerships like that. But definitely always keeping that mindset of, we can do more to bring care to folks because parents have a lot on their plates. And that's sometimes a roadblock, making those appointments, keeping those appointments and organizing that schedule. But if we can do a little better to help families out, I love making it a little easier.
Nicole, I couldn't help but catch your phrase there when you asked the question, you know, does that work for us? Which I assume means like, you know, the state, the CHIP program, or does this work for families? You have a unique ability to not make that an either or, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's just such a, that's such a lovely thing that helps guide. I can appreciate all those decisions that you make on a regular basis. Rachel, I'm curious, what's your experience? Where do you see your experience showing up in the way that you do your work?
As a chief of staff, I'm a generalist. Some big projects I've been working on right now are HR1 and work requirements. And while working to implement them, the mantra has been keep people covered and keep people fed. My experiences as a pediatric nurse working with patients for 10 years collectively creates a lens for how I approach the work across the board. I mean, I remember working in the emergency department and I cared for kids who came in severe respiratory distress because they weren't able to afford their inhaler. And now they're in the hospital on oxygen and breathing support. I cared for kids who had diabetes and their family couldn't afford their insulin. And they ended up in the hospital with diabetic ketoacidosis, needing an insulin drip and a stay in the ICU. I remember one kid who was about 9 years old and he was just diagnosed with appendicitis and told he needed surgery. And he's sick and pain. And his first question is, how much will it cost? Because he had heard his parents fighting and struggling with money lately. And we look at these policies oftentimes a little bit removed, and maybe it's a number or maybe it's words in a memo, but it really emphasizes that there's a real human life attached to the policies that we're doing. And my experiences really drive trying to keep people and patients at the center and the human life impact top of mind. There are policies that make healthcare decisions hinge on affordability, and that's just where we're at in some places right now. And we're working really hard to implement the sweeping changes in HR1. And it's a hard time, and we're all working to come into compliance and keep our programs afloat. And in the process, I've had to both ask and answer questions that can be inherently really sad. And we're faced with some budget decisions, and they might contrast with the real world or the real human impacts that they're going to have. And so my experience is, again, it really just brings a lens to how I approach the work and ask questions. And as we're making decision-making and how we're going to implement these policies. And what drives me is just knowing that this is a life-saving program.
Yeah, Rachel, thank you. I appreciate that keeping people at the center. I mean, so often in our work in the public sector, we end up talking about policy. We end up talking about the disconnect between the work and the human impact can get lost or at least stretched. As we think about the work that you're all doing, I mean, one of the curiosities that we have is, based on how you've navigated your roles and different roles, different states, but What would you say to a new Medicaid leader or to somebody else who has that personal experience and doesn't know necessarily what to do with it? You know, doesn't know how to make that front and center to their work. What advice would you give for somebody who is coming with the types of experiences that you have? Martin, maybe I'll start with you.
Yeah. And kind of going a little bit of what Rachel was talking about and that human impact. Personally, I work with data every day, very data-driven person, like to make data-driven decisions. And I think data it's really great, very powerful, but I think data often misses like nuances, feelings, challenges, and so forth. So I think it's very easy to look at data, but you risk like losing sight of that human impact and the human being and these personal stories. So I think that's very important to look at multiple perspectives when you work in a Medicaid program and to use different tools and resources that you have available. Also for me, someone who lives, breathes Medicaid every day, you think it'd be easy to get access to Medicaid. And I thought it was challenging at times. So I think bringing experiences to the table really can help build a better program with services that beneficiaries need. Also programs that are easier to access, materials that are easy to read. And just thinking about like that coordination of care, like all the hoops people need to go through, like, can we make it easier, like to get plugged in with all these different caregivers around us? So all that experience, I think, is very relevant. So yeah, absolutely. I think people should bring that experience to the table. And like I said before, I think when we make program decisions and policy decisions, just think about the beneficiary, like how does it impact them as a result of the change, or like how can we do things to make it easier on them? So it's an everyday thing for me.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Nicole, I'm curious. I think there's a lot of folks who come into professional settings and they want to look competent, right? They want to look like they know their stuff. You're so good at weaving in your personal narrative to that work. And I wonder what you've learned in terms of how to bring that in and what somebody else could learn from your experience of trying to figure out where to piece those parts of yourself together as you present in your role today.
I would say it wasn't always easy. It was something I learned to do once I got more comfortable that Medicaid is a vulnerable space. This is compassionate work. The end result is always people. So it's kind of hard to separate that compassion out of the work. So as you said, I thought it meant more about my technical skills, feeling confident, but I was a better leader once I was able to say, hey, I remember going through processes like this and it didn't work. We should look at this differently, or invite people who are actually users of the process in to give their lens and their voice to what we're seeing. I'm often the one in the room like you said, Mark, does that work for us? Are we sure that's going to work for everyone, not just the folks in the room when we're doing our data and our analysis? It's like, okay, but those are people. How do we bring that to the center? Like Rachel was just saying, how do we always come back to that view that the person is at the center of all our work? So me making a personal connection to myself makes me remember that humanness of the work we're doing, not avoiding it and just embracing that this is a vulnerable space and this is compassionate work that you do on a daily basis. Not to be afraid of that. Sometimes I think people don't realize how compassionate Medicaid and all these social programs are, especially for the leaders in the space. Most of the people I know who work here have a connection to the programs they use or the programs that we cover in our Department of Human Services. So we're all very we know the value of these programs and we want to help the people who need that support. So my advice would be to lean into that vulnerability, lean into that compassion. Don't try to separate it out. Just let it naturally blend together.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Richie, you actually talked about making the courageous decision to testify. And even in our conversation today, your ability to sort of weave these stories together, it's really powerful. I wonder what you would add to Martin and Nicole's comment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very similar. I have another anecdote that I think about often in this, that it's clearly impacted me for a very long time since it happened. But I remember when I was in nursing school and an undergrad research assistant on a team of just like very esteemed doctorate faculty, including the dean of the nursing school. And they asked me if on this project, if I could join a meeting to share my experiences and to lead focus groups. And I, you know, balked. And she said, you know, everyone has something to bring to the table. And she really wanted to hear my perspective. And I was 18 years old, raised on Medicaid and food stamps, like I said, was lucky enough to have Pell Grants to even go to undergrad. And it took some time, but they eventually convinced me that they genuinely wanted to hear me speak in meetings. And so I'm thinking about this question almost in two ways. And so one, like how to bring new Medicaid leaders with lived experience into Medicaid. And so I did a career switch also, and like, don't be discouraged from going into a role because you think you don't know enough or you're not qualified or you're worried about credentials. Number two would be, people really do want to hear that unique and informed perspective that you bring to the conversation, and it makes for better policy. And you know what Nicole was saying about hypothetical, it's like beyond the black and white words on a memo, it just makes policies that are better informed and actually work for people. And so being, you know, someone who can make policies in a system, who's lived through the system, it's so powerful.
I just love hearing from the three of you, and a number of things really. First, you know, that you have all, I think, productively pushed back on an orthodoxy that I and a lot of other people were raised on in leadership, and that was kind of a strict separation of kind of professional and personal influences. It's been a little bit of a professional lifetime for me doing something different than that, because it was such an overlay. Hearing you all talk about interweaving those very formative experiences, both for yourselves and the profound connective experiences with people you are walking alongside, and Martin, you know, directly, obviously in your family, but you know, those opportunities as professionals and as clinician, Rachel, are really, really profound. Also, just love the aspect of also pushing on the way in which policy has traditionally been mapped in Medicaid, a kind of linear agency-led process that typically had formal comment periods. I think in recent years, and really spanning from the public health emergency, so much more emphasis on concurrent connection and influence and opportunity to learn from people who are being served by the program. And all of you are embodying that in really important ways as we walk forward at a time of intensity and change for the program. So I just want to thank you and say that, you know, Mark and I, and I'm sure the listening audience would say, we don't take for granted that you would give us the benefit of those very, very personal experiences. They're enormously illuminating and informative as we all think about how to make the program as effective and supportive for people as it can be, as human-centered in its design as possible. Mark, what resonated with you particularly in our discussion?
I'm just reminded of how important public trust and credibility is for delivering services that are meaningful, important, life-saving for folks. And knowing the three of you, I appreciate that you just do this as part of who you naturally are, and I want to honor the sense of it's just part of who you are in your work. I actually think that has a really important ramification, Martin, going back to your commitment to wanting people to feel heard. What a powerful and direct way that you're doing that in big and small ways. I just think that has really important ramifications. And the invitation to invite others to not feel, Kate, that they have to live that sort of paradigm of there's work and then there's the rest, and really being able to be full human. The work of Medicaid leadership is really hard. And I just want to honor the way in which all of you show up as humans in that process. And what a pleasure it is to be able to share that with our listeners.
thank you all for this absolutely wonderful conversation. We really appreciate it. And also want to say thank you to our listening audience. Please stay tuned for future conversations of the Medicaid Leadership Exchange.
This podcast is a collaboration between the Center for Healthcare Strategies and the National Association of Medicaid Directors. It is made possible by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.